Right now, we get on the phone and welcome into the show our friend, writer, and critic, and Red Sox fan, Colin Fleming. Hey, Colin.
Ha-ha! Glorious victory, sir.
Yes, indeed. And you are joining me. I believe we will be co-presidents of the We'll Help Pack His Bags If Craig Kimbrell Will Just Leave Town Club.
I have just returned from the Back Bay where I was doing that very self-same thing. I cannot wait to never have to watch him in Red Sox clothes again.
Yeah, he drove me crazy. But boy, this team, I have to say, was one of the most enjoyable teams for me to watch in many, many years.
Yes, enjoyable. I think some of that enjoyability was cut into the fact with what is dogging baseball in general right now, that they are asking so much of you nightly. This is not so much a problem for someone like me who has no life presently, but for other people who do, and when I do again, it's a grind. The way Red Sox batters grind out at bats, baseball grinds you out over the course of the year, and I think that makes it very difficult in some ways. But the bottom line is this team, wow. I mean, I think people are getting very carried away with calling it one of the greatest teams of all time. I think we have to make a very crucial distinction between things like having the best season and being the best team, even when it comes to Red Sox squads this century.
Well, I think a big part of it, too, is that there were so many teams around the league that really didn't attempt to be competitive this year, and that's bound to jack up your win total.
Sure. They hoovered up wins against the Orioles, right? I mean, a laughingstock franchise. Now, they did. Their division, to be fair, was the iron of this particular mine. It was legit. Even if you take the Rays. Now, the Rays would have been nearly the number one seed in the National League, and they weren't near the playoffs in the American League. I think the Rays could have given a team like the Dodgers a battle with the way that they had their opener going and everything. And, yes, the Red Sox did go through two 100-plus win teams in the playoffs, of course. We tend to forget, that the 2004 Red Sox pulled off that same achievement. In fact, the two of the three teams they beat had higher win totals, right? The Yankees of 04, 101. And the Cardinals were an absolute wagon that year of 105 wins. And the Red Sox effectively turned that horse into pace, right? For your sticker book, pretty much. That was a mauling of that particular team. And I think when we're talking about, though, best ever teams, what we need to look at are factors like run differential and Hall of Famers. And this Red Sox team could conceivably have no Hall of Famers when it's all said and done. I think you take a team like the 04 team, they'll eventually get there, probably, these guys. But they had four Hall of Famers. They had four legitimate Hall of Famers. And they had other guys who were in the Hall of Very Good, like a Johnny Damon. They had a closer who, for that year, was completely efficacious. And if you pit the two teams against each other, now, if you look at this, like, 2018 Red Sox team, they had a run differential of, like, 230. If you get over 200, you are like, wow, that is impressive. But to put that in perspective, the 1939 Yankees lost Lou Gehrig at the beginning of the year, Lou Gehrig's disease and all that, never to return, and their run differential was over 400.
Wow.
So I think we have to pull back a little bit on these particular horses, but best season, just in terms of crispness, and we will dominate you and not lose a series to you. The series that stood out to me were the ones against, like, the Astros in the regular season where they would drop the first two games and before game set, you'd think, this isn't going to go well. And they would rally. And so that 2-2 series split would feel more impactful, more weighty than it actually was. And it probably was pretty weighty in the end, too.
Now, one of the popular narratives about this postseason run is the redemption of David Price. I always thought that the idea that he was not and could never be a good postseason pitcher was a bit overblown. No, he had not had great success in the past as a starter, but that did not necessarily mean he couldn't and would never be. What are your thoughts on David Price and this supposed redemption?
Oh, I don't think it was overblown before. I think it was understated. And I think what happened this postseason is fine and good. And it was actually more of a mixed bag than some of the revelators are saying right now. And look, you're 0-9 in your starts before this postseason. You have an ERA over 6. That is not some small sample size. It's like you're in a relationship. You're in 20 relationships. And in every single relationship, you're just cheating your heart out. It's like, woohoo, I love betting different people. Bet, 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 bet. Well, then when you end up with someone else, right, and maybe you've made it work for 2 months, it can still enter their mind, and it probably should, that, like, hey, Captain Philanderer here might be out doing his thing tonight when I haven't heard from him. So, yeah, he had the 3 wins this postseason. He also was horrible in his first start, and 2 of the 3 start wins were very low-leverage type of setups for him. You're up 3-1 in the series. That kind of next game, if you look at it contextually, how they won those games before to get to 3-1, it was kind of house money start. It wasn't down 3-1. So now he's 3-9. It's like if you were looking at Baseball Reference today, some guy maybe you hadn't heard of who retired in 1970, and you're looking over his postseason stats, and you see 3-9 with an ERA of, what, for like 5-2 now for Price, you wouldn't think, well, he redeemed himself. Baseball is very numbers-driven. You'd look at them and be like, that dude sucked. And Price still has a long way to go. Would it surprise anyone if he starts out losing to the Yankees next year? That's why I really didn't appreciate his whole dudgeon, his expression, this complete like imprecation of Boston fans. Now I have the Trump card. It's like, easy there, 3-9. Let's do it a bit longer first.
Well, isn't that part of the natural reaction, though? What have you done for us lately? And then the response is, I did this lately, and that wipes out everything that I didn't do before.
It is, right. And we know that not just in sports, more so in life, things do not work that way. If you've done wrong, and, you know, what he did this postseason, it was fine. It was good. It wasn't 65, 66 Sandy Koufax. This man is being paid a lot of money to throw a sphere through the air to avoid the sweet spot of a stick. Like, you should be, I feel, more dominant. He was not their pitcher who was their sort of horse type of guy. If you go back to those first couple series, what were the most difficult starts? The most difficult starts were the game 3s in the other team's ballpark.
Right.
And that's when Nathan Eovaldi was the guy. Like, they could have jiggered the pitching rotation any way they wanted to. Do you think it was coincidence that it was Eovaldi who was going to be the man in the other team's ballpark? Like, of course it wasn't. And, yeah, it was good to see with Price, but I think this whole this saturnine quality he has, this maybe he won't opt it back in with the Red Sox, but it's like you're 3-9, and you did your job. And I don't know. That, to me, is not like time for the revenge tour.
We're talking with Colin Fleming here on Downtown. Well, that brings us to what you believe, and I completely agree with you, is the defining moment of this season. I think it's the moment and the memory that people will have 10, 15, 20 years down the road, and it's a moment that came in the only loss in the World Series.
Gosh, I hope that's true. I hope it is people's sort of defining takeaway moment. I wonder if it will be with all of these other stories, but yes, we're of course talking about Nathan Eovaldi entering that game in the 12th inning after Alex Cora, who has had the Midas touch all year, had just mismanaged that game as poorly as you could, pulling Porcello after 61 pitches. He had J.D. Martinez out of that game way too early. He has the catcher playing first base, and it's one thing if the catcher's ever done that, but the catcher never had, certainly not at the major league level, and he basically put this man out there to risk his health and to risk his career. And I really didn't see, given the state of the Red Sox offense, how they could win that game. And if they did score, eventually Eovaldi was going to be out. There would be a reasonable chance he wasn't going to be there to, quote-unquote, defend the bottom of the inning. And you would have had as much chance with, like, you, me, or Carey coming in as Drew Pomeranz at this point. No knock on him for the year he had before, but he was all wrong this year, and his ERA actually this year in this horrible, horrible, horrible garbage year, to give you an idea about David Price, to flash back to that, he had the same ERA Price had in his starts up until this year. That's what Pomeranz was this year, and we think of him as like the worst pitcher ever, right? And for Eovaldi to do that when you kind of knew it was a loss. So it was something inexorable. And yet there he was, duty bound to try and do the right thing. And when you have someone attempting to combat the inexorable, to me, you have the ineffable. And that is art. That is sport at the level of art. And I thought it was heroic. I mean, there's a reason my blog is called Many Moments More. It comes from the quote, heroism is endurance for one moment more. And that guy going out there, and it's the 16th inning, it's the 17th inning, the crowd is quieter and quieter, and he's grunting each pitch up to the plate, willing it up there. It was something Homeric. It was something that if you were Keats and you had shown up here in your time machine, you would be like, right, got to get home and write a sonnet about this.
Well, and everybody, somebody pointed this out yesterday. It was like, in many ways, it was like a video game. Everybody, by the time you got to those last few innings, was just trying to end it with one big swing. And so you knew how it was going to end. It was just a question of when and where. And yet every inning he would trot back out there and find a way to do service.
Sure. I don't think I was being especially Kreskin-esque when I texted a friend right before it happened. I said, it's only a matter of time before one of these softball players runs into one. It was RBI baseball, like the old video game.
Yeah.
And that was also part of the Dodgers' downfall. It's like, Dodgers, you can work count. You can string a couple singles together. You can get a guy on first, steal second, drive him in. You can have a single and a double. You can score that way too, Gorman Thomas. It doesn't have to be like this homage on a loop to Dave Kingman. And that's like what it looked like. And at that point, they knew. It was just shooting fish in a barrel, and albeit an elusive fish. And I just was thinking, like, it shows you what they thought of Pomerantz. To bring in Pomerantz,
right,
you might as well have forfeited the game. And so when it became the next game, and it was getting late, and I thought, you know, after Puig hit that home run, and he's, like, molesting himself and kissing his biceps as he runs around the bases, I thought to myself, you know what, they're going to make a push here. They might not win this, but this Dodgers team, they think this game is over. They all think it's over. But I hope if they do make a push and they tie it, they better win it in 9, because they'd be better off losing than having it go 14 or 15 after what happened the night before. But that was probably one of my 3 or 4 favorite witnessed events in all of sports. I would not have traded what he did for the championship itself.
Yeah, I can understand that completely. I agree with you. It's Colin Fleming talking Red Sox with us here this afternoon. Colin, we thank you as always. We'll check in again next week, and we'll look for the video of you on the duck boats tomorrow.
Okay, sounds good.
All right, thanks, Colin.